Welcome to the Long COVID podcast with me, Jackie Baxter. I am really excited to bring you today's episode. Please do check out the links in the show notes where you can find the podcast website, social media and support group, as well as a link to buy me a coffee if you are able. You should not rely on any medical information contained in this podcast and related materials in making medical, health-related or other decisions. Please do consult a doctor or other health professional. I love to hear from you. If you've got any suggestions or feedback or just want to say hey, then please do get in touch. I really hope you enjoy this episode, so here we go. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Long COVID podcast. I am absolutely delighted to be joined tonight by Leela O'Brien, who we met on email, I think, a couple of months ago. And I thought, oh my goodness, this person is my person. We need to do this. So I'm really excited that we have finally managed to find a date that works. And we are now here to talk. So a very warm welcome to the podcast today.
Hi, Jackie. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm really excited to be here today, and I appreciate so much what you are doing with this podcast and just putting that all the information and support system out there, because I know there are a lot of us who need it. So again, thanks for what you're doing, and I'm really excited to join you today.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And yeah, I guess as a kind of side note, I mean, I've said this before, but like one of the silver linings of this has to be the connections that we make with other people that we would never have connected with otherwise. And I just think that, you know, in something that is a really horrible thing to have gone through, it's something nice to have come out of it that I've certainly noticed. So before we veer off topic too badly, maybe you would just say a little bit about yourself.
First of all, I agree with you that the connections that have come out of this, it's definitely a silver lining. I've met so many people, and sharing that compassion and being there for each other, it's really been a beautiful thing. But yeah, a little bit about myself. I am 36 years old. And I guess before I got COVID, I was just really into outdoor adventures, rock climber, ice climber, runner, skier, you name it. But in general, just love being out in nature. Also a science nerd. So before I got COVID, I was an aerospace engineer, very driven, also very driven with my outdoor activities, the climbing, the skiing. And I think in one of your other interviews, I remember someone else said that they mentioned an interesting data point that a lot of people with long COVID tend to be actually were very healthy and fit prior to getting COVID. Not just that, but also perfectionists. Very driven and maybe push themselves a little too hard. And I, you know, tend to be high stress, and I definitely fit in that category. So I think even before, about a year leading up to my getting COVID, I put a lot of pressure on myself with my career and my outdoor activities. After I got my PhD, I went straight into a job working for NASA on a NASA space mission. I wasn't working directly for NASA, but contracted. And I didn't give myself the break I needed to recover. And I was used to being this type of person who could just focus so intently and for so long. And I just put so much pressure on myself for so long that I eventually got burnout. And so even before getting COVID, I hit this wall and I could not focus to save my life. I remember just being at work, calling my mom, crying, saying like, why? I don't understand. I'm not used to this. I don't know why I can't focus anymore or get any work done. And I just kept trying to push through, and same with the outdoor activities. So I am not surprised that I got long COVID, to be honest. It was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to so much of what you've just said. I mean, I'm obviously not been working for NASA. That is super cool. But yeah, you know, I think
it's not everybody, but there were a lot of people, possibly even the majority. I'm not sure if that's 100% true, of people with long COVID were, yeah, very busy, very driven. And again, they're the sort of personalities that don't rest when we need to, because rest is evil, rest is bad, rest is showing weakness. Why would we want to do that? I've heard this like from myself, and again, I've heard it from a lot of other people. And I don't know, I think like part of it for me in my recovery was, it's very easy to blame ourselves and say, oh, well, no wonder I got all of this. I brought it down on myself. How could I be so stupid? And it was like, no, there's no point blaming myself. There's no point blaming anyone else. Blame is probably not really helpful here. But at the same time, it was useful to kind of recognize some of those things that happened so I can do better, I guess. I think that was certainly one of my takeaways from it. That actually doing that all the time is not healthy. Being busy, being driven isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it can be an unhealthy pattern if it becomes all the time, I think. But there's no point blaming ourselves because we didn't know any better.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. And I realized that as well. There's no point in blaming and, the shoulda, coulda, woulda. Like the past is the past. And I mean, that's part of our story. That's part of our life journey and recognizing that. And you're right. There's nothing wrong with being driven. There's nothing wrong with wanting to, explore and have goals even. But I think it's, yeah, when we become too obsessed with it and put all our eggs in one basket. We must accomplish and keep accomplishing and keep, going on the hamster wheel in order to feel worthy in our lives. And that's kind of when burnout happens. And it's, if you're being fueled by the ego or just this need to, get something done or, please other people or your life just feels like a chore, you're probably not being fueled by the right things. Like, I mean, I used, even regarding my job and my outdoor activities, I used to be fueled by passion and creativity. And then when I started recognizing I was fueled by, feeding my ego, that's kind of when things started to fall apart. And that's been a silver lining in my journey as well. Kind of going back to my roots. Why do I follow my passions to begin with? What's the true, what's my true calling? What do I really love about it versus what are the external factors that are driving me?
Yeah, I love that so much. And there was something you touched on just there about the self-worth and what we tell ourselves is important. And I think, for all of my life, really, my upbringing has taught me, society has taught me, the world has taught me that it's important to do well at school and to get a good job and to get a good income and all of these things that make you a quote unquote productive member of society. And then when you get something like long COVID and you are not a quote unquote productive member of society because you can't be, then suddenly you feel like this awful failure, and you're constantly, pushing yourself or trying to push yourself to do these things that you can't do because you're sick. And then on top of all of that, you feel terrible because you're a failure. There was someone said to me that your accomplishments aren't the only thing that's important about you. Even if I didn't recover and never worked another day in my entire life, that still means that I'm a valid person. And it's frustrating that we do feel this pressure from society, whether it's, from other people or just the world in general. But yeah, this is definitely something that I've noticed. And how do we feel that self-worth when we're not productive in the way that society tells us we should be?
Oh, I mean, everything you said, like, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. This is something that all of us going through long COVID, not just long COVID, a lot of challenges in life, probably most people will experience in their life at some point. And like you, like I tied my identity to my accomplishments. And for me, at least, it was 100%. Like, my full self-worth was in what I achieved academically and athletically. And I mean, who knows where that originally stemmed from? Like, I think society plays a role, absolutely. But I think I never really had the highest self-esteem. And I think I got a lot of my self-esteem from those achievements. And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, I don't know, I got a lot of praise for how well I did, with my job, with my athletic achievements. And it kind of became like a drug to me. I was like, oh, this is wonderful. Like, everybody like loves me, thinks I'm great at these things. This feels good. And I think I felt like I had no value beyond that because that's all people really were complimenting me for. I didn't get complimented as much aside from my family for anything else. So why would I think I had more value? And then, after I got long COVID, it affected my cognitive function. So I couldn't really do my job well, but I also could hardly move for a while, so I couldn't do any of my athletic activities. So I lost all of that. And I like you said, I felt like a failure. I felt like, what good am I? I can't do any of the things that people loved about me. And at the end of it though, like I did realize, like, wait, no, I'm so much more than this. There's a lot more to me. And there's a lot more that I value in myself and that I truly believe other people value in me. And I mean, looking back at it, I'm happier with the person I am now than pre-COVID because I was selfish. I was very like driven by my goals. And now, I'm a lot less that way. I'm more giving. I've been connecting more with people I love and just meeting new people, especially through this long COVID experience, giving back and just having more fun with life and feeling more passionate and excited and creative. And that doesn't mean I don't still struggle, with that ego part. I do, but it really has changed for me a lot. And I would take this new person any day over the old one who was achieving more. I don't know if you feel that with yourself or if you kind of, came to a similar conclusion.
I think it is interesting because when you are forced into this position, where you are ill, it's not like you've made changes out of something that you wanted to do. You've literally been forced to do it, and your life has been turned upside down by something that you didn't ask for, you didn't want, you're not enjoying it, and it's really, really difficult. And it's almost like you're kind of forced to confront things that you don't want to. And I certainly found, I mean, I had a counsellor who I'm still seeing now, and I honestly couldn't handle life without her at the moment, I think. She's just been such a big part of the last 2 years. And I think speaking to her has been wonderful. But I think even without her, you're sort of forced to confront these bits of you that maybe you don't like very much. And I didn't enjoy that at all because I don't know, I wouldn't have called myself arrogant, but it was almost like I didn't have time to really think about who I was because I was the things I did, a bit like you were saying. So suddenly I wasn't the things I did because I couldn't do them. So what was left? And you sort of, yeah, there's definitely things in there that I found that I was a bit uncomfortable with. And I think it was a good experience to have had, in terms of finding those bits and pieces of me that I maybe didn't like, because I think it probably has made me a better person, a more empathetic person, probably a kinder person, I hope. But it wasn't an enjoyable experience at all. And it's not like old me is completely gone. Like, she's definitely still here, right?
Yep. That's the tough part, it's like a back and forth. Like we're, trying to, rewire your brain and be like, wait, no, I don't want to, be that person anymore. I can't be, I'm not, but it still pops up every now and then. And that's normal. Like we're not gonna just completely rid ourselves of the ego, but can we like shut it down quicker? Yeah. And I've learned to do that a lot better. And I don't think I would have if it weren't for having the long COVID. Like I had no reason to. I was just like you were saying, like you're so caught up in doing and achieving, and you feel like you don't have time to even address.
Your inner stuff, I guess, isn't it?
Like your life crisis and what, the meaning of your life and all that.
We'll be right back. I'm interrupting myself for a second to tell you about Long COVID Breathing. The fabulous Vicky Jones and I have teamed up to bring you Long COVID Breathing. We are both passionate about sharing our expertise and experience of the breath and how incredibly helpful that can be with Long COVID. We've worked together to develop a course that is specifically tailored to those with Long COVID. It's a 6-week course with 12 sessions, all delivered online. The community feel and learning that we're all sharing is such a joy. To find out more information and to sign up for our courses, workshops and other shorter sessions, please check out the link below, longcovidbreathing.com, or email longcovidbreathing@gmail.com to start your breathing journey with us. But it's really interesting. And again, this is something that I've kind of noticed post-recovery as well for me. And it's that I think partway through the illness, I realised that the person that I was before wasn't as perfect as I thought she was. You know, I spent the first maybe half of my recovery just desperate to go back to being that person. So I was trying to push through and I was trying to do all the wrong things and thinking the wrong things and, you know, just doing everything wrong and nothing was getting better. Then kind of realizing that actually that life before, like, there were a lot of really great things about it, but also there was a lot of stuff that was there because it was there rather than actually because I wanted it to be there. And since finding things that did help, since seeing a lot of improvement, and then since actually recovering, it's almost like I've been able to say, right, now I'm Jaxter 2.0, this is an upgrade. And I get to kind of pick the bits that I want. So there's a lot of me from before that is still there. And there's a lot of me from before that I really like. But there is definitely some of that stuff that I've wanted to try and let go of. And I certainly don't want to come across as one of these people that says, oh, I'm so grateful for my illness because it's, you know, done this and it's done that. Because I don't think I will ever be grateful for my illness. It was hellish. But at the same time, there are things that I have been able to do better as a result of it. But I also remember someone saying that to me when I was kind of halfway through and I hadn't found anything good. And she was like, oh, yeah, you know, it was a good experience to have had. I've come out better. And I'm like, what? So I think that's definitely something that as I've seen improvement and as I have come out the other side, that I've been able to put a slightly more positive slant on it. Even though I'm still acknowledging that it was awful. And I don't think I will ever not acknowledge that because it was horrific. And I don't think anyone should ever deny that it was horrific.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. And I'm still in it too. I'm not even, you know, fully recovered. And I don't look at it as this like wonderful thing. Like, oh, like it has been hellish and it's nothing has tested me more in this life. Or, I mean, I think in the whole like being grateful for it, I think it is more, at least for me, it's that this is life and life is going to not always go the way you want it to. And part of my story, it's what's happening to me and I've changed because of it. And I can see the good and the bad in it. You know, there are things I don't like about it, but I've also changed in a way that I love and it's going to happen regardless. So what matters is how I react to it at this point, because there's nothing I can do to change it. And we hope for recovery. We believe we can. But I mean, even if it doesn't happen, that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy life anymore. And that's, I guess, well, I don't know if this is going off into a tangent, but that's kind of one of my greatest lessons in this is, I mean, how do we be with it and acknowledge this is tough? And there are going to be those days where, you know, we have to be real about it and be like, this sucks. Like I, you know, like for instance, like I lost motor function and I'm like, I can't do the things that I want to do at the same level at this time. And I'm upset about that. But I also realize that I can't dwell on that too much. I still have a life to live. There's still a lot of life to enjoy. And I was so miserable for so long when I just was upset about the situation, like didn't want it to happen. I was like, I wish this didn't happen, but like there was nothing I could do about it. So I think I had this turning point where, and I guess this is jumping into that whole, finding the balance between hope and acceptance. Might as well just jump into it now. But For me, I tried all these different things to get better, like supplements, and I already had a healthy diet, but eating even healthier. I left my job, like tried to reduce stressors, and each day that I woke up and was not better, I felt miserable. And I think I got to this point where I was like, I'm so focused on my healing and wanting to be better that I'm missing out on life. I'm missing out on enjoying my life for what it is. And I kind of just realized, like, maybe I shouldn't focus so much on the outcome and the need to heal. I felt like I needed to trust in it and just be like, I believe 100% that healing is possible for me. And I've seen it happen in other people. I know it's possible. The mind and body together can do amazing things. And I mean, look at all these other people you've interviewed, these other people with long COVID and other illnesses in the world who have recovered. But I realized I needed to stop focusing so much on it because that was making me worse, honestly. It was like letting me down, and I was just fighting against it too much. And yeah, I got to this point where I'm like, you know what? I deserve to still enjoy my life. That doesn't mean I'm not going to have the hard days where I'm struggling and feeling like, oh, this sucks. I wish it were different. But I think the difference was, is I started to just, I acknowledge those feelings and I process those emotions. And then I kind of just let them pass and was like, well, I'm going to enjoy my life anyway. And, I'm still going to get outside and do the activities to the, best of my ability, still be in nature and do what I love and still like find a life that lights me up because I deserve that. Why not? Why shouldn't I? And I think that's actually kind of the, in my opinion, the gateway to healing is kind of not really focusing so much on your symptoms and what you're going through, but kind of living kind of like you're already healed. I started doing that. And when I recovered the first time, I did have a initial recovery. It's when I kind of just forgot about it. And I like just went outside and did what I could, enjoyed, being in nature. And, because I mean, I'm a rock climber, and like for a while I could hardly walk. And then when I was able to like climb again for the first time, I didn't even care that I still had issues with my motor function. I was just happy I could do it. And it was definitely a learning curve for me, and it still is, absolutely. But I think, yeah, the greatest thing I've gotten out of this is like, wow, I can enjoy my life even with this illness. I can still have a full and vibrant life. And I believe healing can happen, but I don't need to wait for my recovery.
It's that what can we do, isn't it? Just because we can't do everything we want to doesn't mean that we can't do some things that we want to, or maybe we can do some of them but in a slightly adapted way. And I think, I don't know, I mean, I found this some of the time as well, that you can get so caught up in how awful things are that you kind of forget to focus on some of those things that you can do. And like some of those things that you can do some of the time is like, I can lie on my sofa and drink hot chocolate. That's all I can do today. But actually, is there a way that we can say, well, actually, I really like hot chocolate and my sofa is quite comfy. So is there a way of, rather than making this a really negative thing, to just maybe try and think about the positive a little bit more. And that's not to say that oh well, positive thinking, that'll cure you and that'll everything will be fine. Like, it's not that simple at all. But if you could choose to feel positive about something or negative about it, then I think I would always rather try to see the positives in something rather than the negatives personally.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I love what you said about the hot chocolate because that's exactly what I had to do. I would have 2 to 3 months where I could hardly walk. And all I could do was sit on the couch and drink hot chocolate. And I was like, oh yeah, this is nice. Or like a cup of tea. I'm like, this is, let me find the blessings. Let me find the good because yeah, like it feels a lot better than feeling miserable all the time and playing victim. Like, and that's what I felt personally. Like, I mean, and who knows the recipe to physical healing, but you get to a point where it doesn't even matter as much anymore if you've healed physically, if you feel whole and happy still. And like I said, we're human. We're not perfect. I'm not saying like every day we should feel, so happy for every, like we are going to like resent this. That's natural, but it's kind of just, I guess, an overall attitude and not dwelling on that or really staying in that negative space for that long.
Yeah, and I think, maybe that is acceptance, accepting that I'm going to try and make the best of things where I can, and I also am accepting that there are going to be some bad days, and it's okay to feel those bad days when they happen because they are bad and they're not comfortable and they're horrible and you feel terrible, and it's not trying to pretend that they're not horrible because they clearly are. We've all experienced them on some level. Yeah, maybe that is sort of the true acceptance, isn't it? And then it was almost like for me, once I stopped fighting against it, then actually that did help a bit. And I was able to then be like, okay, this is what it is now. I'm not saying that this is what it's going to be like forever because I was never going to accept that, but I am accepting that this is what it's like now. And then that definitely did help. That, alongside, as you were saying, the hope for recovery, keeping that belief, but without the pressure. I think when you're putting so much pressure on yourself to recover, and then this comes into the perfectionist thing that we were talking about earlier, that you and I definitely have in common, and I think a lot of other people I've spoken to as well. If you are constantly trying to make yourself be perfect and do recovery perfectly, then you're just putting so much pressure on yourself that your body is going to struggle with. So it's finding that nice balance, isn't it, between the two, where you're not saying, well, I'm never going to recover, because we have to have that belief, but you're also accepting that it might be a bit of a bumpy road, which it does seem to be.
Part of the acceptance is accepting that, yeah, there are going to be hard days, and that's okay. And I mean, even prior to me getting COVID, I mean, I've dealt with this with, chronic anxiety and depression for years. I'm going to have awful days. Then all I need to do is be able to ride it out. I don't need to be positive every second. And especially, for my long COVID journey, it's that balance between hope and acceptance. It's a tricky one, because for the hope piece, for instance, like we don't know anything for certain. However, I have no reason to believe that I'm not going to heal. I might have all the data against me, but I will never give in to that, because why should I? That limits that possibility. Because I do think the mind-body connection is very strong. And if we believe in something, our mind and body together can make it happen. I mean, if your body, if your body can make you sick, it can heal. So I will never not believe in my healing, but I shouldn't put my pressure on myself to heal, like you were saying. That pressure is unhealthy, and that's going to make you even more sick. And you're so focused on it that you see yourself as sick. And how can you be well if you see yourself as sick? It doesn't really send the body or the mind, the right message for healing. So that has been challenging for me, but I've just been doing a lot of meditation work around this as well to believe in my healing, but also, yeah, just make peace with what is. And I go about life as normal as I can. I mean, it looks different, but I guess I don't fo I try not to focus on the symptoms as much anymore. And that when I healed the first time, no supplement, no diet, no, not, like that was the thing that ended up doing it for me. I mean, I don't know for sure, but it seemed to be that moment that when I recovered the first initially. And like living your life as if you're healed, it doesn't mean you're pretending you're healed. You just have the same, yeah, I guess like gratitude and emotion, but you're just finding a way to enjoy your life.
We'll be right back.
Hey there, I'm just jumping in for a second to see if you're enjoying this episode. If you're finding it useful, maybe you would consider sharing it somewhere, a friend, a group, or even on your Twitter feed. If everyone was able to share just once, we'd be able to get this information out to even more people who really, really need it. So please consider sharing somewhere if you possibly can. I hope you enjoy the episode, and thank you so much.
Yeah, it's again, it's coming back to that foot of focusing on the can rather than the can't, I think, isn't it? I guess it's so easy to get pulled into that, awfulness, because it takes over everything in your life, doesn't it, when you're sick with something like this. And, it's not just taking over your life for a couple of days, like a, quote unquote regular illness. It's taking over every aspect of your life for a long period of time. So it's very difficult to see any aspect of your life that you can go about in any way close to normal. And then that kind of gets into a bit of a spiral, doesn't it? Where you can think, oh, well, everything's terrible. And yeah, everything is terrible. It's pretty horrendous. But if we can find those little things, then sometimes the little things can then become bigger things. And definitely, focusing, it's very difficult not to focus on your symptoms and your illness because it's, so obviously there. But if you're able to just, even for a little bit, take yourself away from them, then it can just be so helpful. However difficult that is, however little you can do it, I think it's really worth trying to do.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, you're right. It is difficult. It's very much in your face. Like, and yeah, like not focusing on it was not easy for me at all. Like, my motor function, my hands and feet don't work the same. So it's like, how can I not? I can't even try and open a jar without being like bombarded by this or the intense fatigue. Like, you can't ignore it. It's hard to. But I think, yeah, that's where a lot of, at least for me, like getting outside and meditation has been very helpful. It's like good sorts of distractions, I guess, or I don't know if distraction is the right word, but making the effort to try not to pay attention to it constantly. And it's not easy, but I feel like over time I've gotten a lot better at it to just, and it's not that I don't acknowledge it because it is in your face. I'm like, okay, this is happening, whatever. This has been going on for a while. So, yeah, like it sucks, but I'm just gonna keep on with my life though. And so that's kind of more of the attitude I take with it. It's not that I ignore or don't acknowledge it, because you're right. It's like it's hard not to, but I kind of just pay it a little attention and then kind of just like, well, this isn't serving me anymore dwelling on this. So let me just think about other things. Let me get excited about something. When you get excited about anything else, it kind of helps take your mind off of it.
It's like taking yourself out of your own head for a bit, isn't it? And this is something that I've really struggled with because I have a very busy brain. It's always talking at me, it's full of ideas. And I love that about my brain in a lot of ways, but it's also like it can be a total nightmare sometimes when I just need a bit of peace and quiet in my head. And then when you have symptoms, when you have illness, the brain is just like, going round and round and round, and it's overthinking and it's thinking about all these terrible things that are happening, and it's very difficult to get away from that. And if we can get out of our own heads a little bit, it's that I've mentioned her before. There's a, I think she's a neuroscientist called Jill Bolte Taylor, and I will drop the link in the show notes because everybody should watch it. But, yeah, she talks about this taking a step to the right, being more in our right brain, in our kind of, less logical, more relaxed side of our head. And, I think certainly for me, I spend so much time in the logical overthinking half of my brain, which is a very necessary part of my brain, but, I don't need to be there all the time. And then those times where I'm able to take a step out of there, it's like, oh, hey, this is quite nice. This is a place I should be more often. And it, for me, it was finding ways to do that. And it still is now. I still have a very busy brain that overthinks and, throws 2 million ideas at me every single day. And it's knowing when to go, okay, thank you, brain. Can we take a break? And it doesn't always listen.
Oh, totally. I have that kind of brain too. I mean, I'm a scientist. So it's like, yeah, nonstop. And you're right. It is finding those things that can bring you out of that because you need a balance the left and the right brain. And I think that's why I'm so drawn to being in the outdoors and even meditating in the outdoors. It's something that brings me to that. Even when I was a kid, I would just go outside and hop on the rocks in my yard for hours because it just, my brain could just kind of like relax. And I was still thinking, but it was different. It was kind of more like creative thoughts, like not as analytical or logical. And it's so important to have that. And I think it's important to find the things that trigger that within you. I mean, everybody's different. For me, it's being out in nature. I mean, when I can climb or run, or I would do that, and I would get into this state, this flow state, where my analytical mind would shut down, and I would just kind of be in a more open and creative state. And I find even going outside for walks, just staring at the sky does that for me. I kind of engage more in that sense of wonder. And that's when I'm not, yeah, just like, yeah, having those thoughts come in like a mile a minute about what about this, to this and this, like, and it's been very critical for my healing. And I think it's important, yeah, for each person to figure out how they individually can find that, because it's going to look different for everyone, where how they reach that.
Yeah, definitely. And I we kind of connected over our sort of love of the outdoors, and we were talking about this a little bit before we hit record. And I think certainly something for me, and I think you've found the same, you know, if there's something that is such a big part of your life before, then, you know, finding ways to get that into things that help you to recover. So for you, you're saying that being outside is something that you've always done, and I can completely relate to that. And you know, suddenly you get sick, and all of those things that you've always done, and the things that you've done to relieve stress, to get out of your head, to do all of these things that you just said, they're the very things that you can't do. Or if you try to do them, they don't end well. So it's like, how do I de-stress when I can't do the things that help me to de-stress? And I think finding this, well, new relationship with some of these things that we did before. So, you know, for me, cold water was a huge part of my recovery, and that I think was so good for me because I was an outdoor adventure kind of person before. So that really resonated. You know, for somebody who was more of a creative person, then finding some creative kind of way of allowing themselves to relax, de-stress, heal, all of these things might resonate more with them. But that's very much, it's doing it in a different way, isn't it? Because, you know, I couldn't go and do all the things that I did before, and the few times that I did try, it was definitely not a good idea. And I sort of learned that one the hard way. So it was, yeah, it was creating this new way of doing the things, or new way of being outside and trying to be happy with that, I suppose. And it sounds like you've had a sort of similar experience.
Yeah, definitely. That was one of the greatest challenges. And I think everybody with long COVID can relate to that, because it's affected your passion, the things you love to do in some way. And like we discussed earlier, initially I thought, if I can't do it at the level that I'm used to doing it at, I don't want to do it at all. Like, this is triggering. And I got to a point where I'm like, well, that's silly. I love this. This is what I love. This is what heals me. And let me find a relationship with it where I can still get those benefits out of it. And initially, when I could, like, not really even get off the couch or walk, I couldn't really do many outdoorsy things at all. And that's when I really took to meditation. And I found that became a new way for me to reach that state. I had to turn to something else. I needed to at that moment. And then as I started getting a little better, I could start walking outside, and I was like, oh, what I love about my activities, like, I love doing the activities, but I also just love movement and being in nature. So if all I can do is, have a little shuffle outside and look at the sky, look at the trees, that's bringing me joy too, because I'm still experiencing that sense of being present, that sense of wonder. It just looks a little different. And I think that was a lesson for me of learning, how can I now adapt to a new normal and still find a way to relax and decompress? And I realized I didn't necessarily need to be doing the most epic and intense athletic things. I didn't need to climb the highest mountain to get that what we call mountaintop moment of that, elation and that excitement, I realized like, wow, I can kind of create that from within actually. And I can even just be outside looking at a sunset and feel that. And I mean, it sounds kind of silly, but like for me, having that realization was pretty huge because before this, my happiness was so conditional. I had to be like doing a hard climb or, achieving some great thing to feel that like almost like euphoria, kind of feeling that I love so much. And I realized that actually, I don't really need that. Like, I can find that in different ways. It's all how I create it. Like, I realized I was the creator of it. And like I said, I'm not perfect at it, but it was a huge realization for me. And it is one of the silver linings of my long COVID was recognizing that I can still have that. I can still find that, even if it is a little different. And we just kind of have to get more creative with how can I find this? I mean, we look at, there's some people who cannot move at all. And look, I see joy in their eyes. I see them enjoying life and having fun. They found a way. I always think back to Stephen Hawking, for instance, and what he made out of his ALS. He just went deep within his mind and found a way to still really get into life and enjoy it and find his meaning. And I think we're all capable of that. And that's not to say there aren't going to be hard days, but I think we can all find a way to still find that, even if we have to adapt it and it looks a little different.
Yeah, I think that's such a beautiful way of putting it. There was someone that in fact, I said this to her in an interview, and she was like, "Oh, it was me that told you that." So I think it was Lorna who said this, that it was working out what it was that she got from certain things. So, what was it that she loved so much about running in the park, for example? And I think she said she worked out that it was being outside, and it was being around people. And she was like, okay, well, I can't do the running, but maybe I can get the outdoors and the sort of social aspect of that in a way that does work for me. And by doing that, by being able to get those things that were so important, then that gives you something to smile about, even if it's just for a very short time. And it's, again, it's coming back to those little things being so important, isn't it? We can't do the big things, and maybe we can do some things if we break them down and find ways around them. But there are lots of things that we can do, and that's important to be able to find those ways to do them, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes the little things are the big things. This is coming from someone who always had to be doing the big things. For me to like recognize that, yeah, I thought, at this time in my life, the small things have to be the big thing. And sometimes they, I mean, what did I love the most about like what you were saying with running, what she loved about it most, she realized it wasn't actually the act of running. And I've learned that as well, like with my outdoor activities. I do love them. I love the act of climbing and, the being focused and problem solving. But I mean, when I look back on my favorite memories in the outdoors, I actually don't look back on the achievement and like how well I did or what I accomplished or, the exact like route I climbed. I remember like the connections, the people I was with, laughing, having a good time. I also think of just that sense of awe and wonder of looking around at the nature around me and just being fully present in my movement. And so I narrowed it down for myself that, okay, I don't necessarily need to achieve the big thing and have the glory. It's really the being in the moment and enjoying other people's company and nature that I connect with and just exploring. And good news is I can still do that. There are still ways I can do that.
Yeah, and it's almost coming back to what you were saying right at the start about the kind of the ego. And it's almost like you've realized that Oh, that's not that important, actually. It's the other stuff that is important, and that's probably what gives you more joy and actually supports you and your body more.
Oh yeah, the ego is so, it's still hard though to shut it down. I mean, my ego got really out of control, and a funny, not funny, but an interesting thing to note is after I recovered quite a bit for a while from my symptoms, and then my ego started kind of getting back in control again. I was able to climb again, and I was climbing strong and running strong, and I started being fueled by my ego. I'm like, oh, I can do, all these, big routes again. Look at me, like defying the odds of long COVID. And then that's when life served me a slice of humble pie, and I, got sick again, and then started losing my motor function again. And I was like, okay, maybe this is my lesson, the ego. But yeah, it always tries to come back. It's hard. It's a hard one for me to shut down, but I realize deep down that's not what truly fuels me in this life.
Which again, yeah, brings us back to the importance of the things that do bring us happiness and joy, even if they are the very small things that seem really inconsequential until you realise actually that, yeah, as you say, the little things actually sometimes can be the big things. So maybe that's a lesson to learn from all of this.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It has been really amazing to finally chat with you and to hear all about your experiences. And, it's just, as you say, it's so nice to connect with someone who kind of has had similar experiences, but through a different lens and all of that. So I think, there's a lot that I've got from chatting to you today, actually, and I'm sure the same is true for everybody else listening. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed talking, and yeah, with each conversation, there's always a new thing to learn, something to connect with someone else on. And I really hope that everybody out there, can connect with us on this as well. And I'm thinking of everybody out there going through this, and just wishing the best.
Thank you so much to all of my guests and to you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it or at least found it useful. The Long COVID podcast is entirely self-produced and self-funded. I'm doing all of this myself. If you're able to, please go to buymeacoffee.com/longcovidpod to help me cover the costs of hosting the podcast. Please look out for the next episode of the Long COVID podcast. It's available on all the usual podcast hosting things. And do get in touch. I'd love to hear from you.